Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo companies for shipments to rural Alaska for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. Well, death is something we all know will inevitably come for us someday. But death is also something that many of us fear. Maybe it's the uncertainty of what comes next, or perhaps it's the fear of not existing. Whatever it is has led us as a culture to shy away from exploring what death means and to speak of death in hushed tones. On today's edition of Line One, my guest is ordained interfaith chaplain Barbara Becker, who will be discussing her new book, Heartwood, which chronicles her search to find the answer to one question: can we live our lives more fully, knowing someday we will die? Welcome to the show, Barbara. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us.
It is wonderful to be with you.
Well, I'll tell you, we're lucky to get this show off because we had a snowpocalypse part two here. We had about a foot of snow last night, and schools are closed, and coming into the studio was quite the ordeal. Lots of cars off the road, and so hopefully weather is a little better for you.
New York, we are zealous over here in New York City.
You're missing some snow. Well, we've got plenty here. So I just want to take a second to remind people that we value listener participation. If you have a question for my guest today or a comment about today's topic, if you want to share your own experience around losing a loved one or how you're dealing with this time of year, which is difficult for many people who have recently lost someone, please give us a call, reach out, participate in today's program. Our Anchorage phone number is 907-550-8433. If you're listening outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell it line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. And we will do our best to get your questions, calls, and emails on the air today with Barbara. So I guess, Barbara, let's start off. Can you give us a little bit about your background, your work history, and kind of what you're doing now besides the book?
Absolutely. So my career for the past couple of decades has been working with international human rights activists and nonprofits around the world, from like Mexico to Myanmar, Angola to Bangladesh. I had the opportunity to work for the United Nations and with the musician Peter Gabriel, actually, on giving video equipment to activists around the world. And writing was always a big part of my work, but I was busy writing international policy pieces. And over time, what I really wanted to do was to tell my own personal story about one of the driving forces in my life, which is taking a careful look at death.
Yeah, and you do it really, really well. With these different stories and sharing the experiences that you've had with many people around death and dying and meaning in life. And those are sort of the questions that you started out to answer. But can you talk a little bit about the title of the book, Heartwood, and who is your target audience? Who would you be writing this book and say, wow, I really hope this person gets an opportunity to read this?
Yeah, so it's funny. I actually started writing the book for my sons. I wanted to tell them about their grandparents at the end of their lives. I wanted to give them an idea of how we might relate to death in a way that is not as terrifying as our society might lead us to believe. And I actually called my book Heartwood because of a metaphor that I found in nature. So if you imagine walking through an old growth forest and you come across a tree, and inside that tree is a pillar. It's the strongest part of the tree, the internal part. It's darker than the growth rings and the sapwood around it, and it's called heartwood. It's the part that's prized by woodworkers for its durability and strength. But what's surprising to most people is that it's dead. The heartwood is completely inert. It's not participating in the flow of water and nutrients up and down the tree. And it turns out for the sap rings to grow around it, they need the strength and the durability of what has come before. You know, I loved that because we people are so much like the trees. I mean, those who we've loved and we've lost really form a deep, enduring part of our essence, and we need it. We need that strength that we derived from the memories of them and their time on this earth in order to just kind of keep expanding out ourselves.
It is beautiful, the way you describe it in the book, and this idea of, you know, this sort of pillar of strength that flows through us all as families and connects us and sort of creates the framework through which we build our lives. It is a nice metaphor, and I like the name for the book because it describes perfectly what you're doing. But this book is not, I mean, it doesn't seem so much about death as it is more about connection.
Yes. I'm so glad that you noticed that, because I learned through the process of taking on death as a journey that when we start looking at our lives with a focus of the end in mind, what we really begin to see is that this is a really interesting way to live a rich and purposeful life. One of the things that I did when I was feeling particularly anxious about death myself was to start reading all of the sages and saints throughout the ages, from the Stoic philosophers like Seneca and Marcus Aurelius to the Buddha to the poet Rumi to wisdom holders of the Judeo-Christian traditions. And I found that uniformly across time and place, they advised us exactly this. They said, it is best if you focus on the fact that someday you won't be here. It's a complete paradigm shift in our world to think that way, but it really does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think about our own ideas of death and how we talk about death and how we sort of cleanse it and protect the children from it. And I want to get a little bit more into that later. But can you give us a little bit about your background? Because somebody doesn't just, I don't think, wake up in their, you know, 30s and say, I'm going to research everything I can about death and dying and in the world and then write a book. So what were some of your early experiences around death? There's a great story of you doing your own experiment with, as a young person with a time limited, thinking about your life as time limited. Can you talk a little bit about some of those early experiences and that friend of yours in particular that sort of facilitated that experiment that you did?
Yes. You're talking about my friend Marissa, who...
Yeah. I think we just may have lost our connection. So we will attempt to get her back on the phone, and I will do my 10-minute reconnect, which is perfect timing since we are 9.5 minutes past the hour. So if you're just tuning in late, interfaith chaplain and author Barbara Becker is joining us today to discuss her new book, Heartwood, which chronicles her journey to answer one question. Can we live our lives more fully knowing someday we will die? If you have a question or a comment for Barbara, you want to share your own experiences around death and dying, we would, or connection or something that was powerful for you. I know I've had quite a few experiences around death myself in my life and with people that were close and people who are not so close, and pets and animals, and that stuff can be really, really hard. So if you're just tuning in, you want to give us a call, our anchorage number is 907-550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can call us toll free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions, line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Barbara, do we have you back?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, and that comforts my soul, because I have a long a long way to go talking to myself. All right.
So I was talking.
Talking about your friend, yes.
About my friend, Marissa. So when she was a young adult, she was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. And she fought a long and valiant fight. She was given a year to live before she turned 40. Her doctor said, "We can't do anything more to help you." And what Marissa did during that time was just extraordinary to me. She married her college sweetheart, David, in spite of the fact that she knew she wouldn't live a long life. And between chemo treatments, she visited Italy, which was her family's ancestral homeland. And then as she got weaker and weaker, she spent a lot of time with her friends and family members and her cats. I heard you mention pets. She was living with a sense of joy, I observed, but I, in the meantime, was extremely anxious. And I was thinking about losing her, and I was extrapolating to, you know, someday I will lose my parents, I will lose other people who are dear to me, and someday I myself will die. So I went along a sort of existential question of, what if this were my last year to live? How would I live differently? And that's when I started reading all of those wise people throughout time. And I also started observing that it's the small things in life, the ways that we're able to be present, that make a huge difference. You know, I had on my bucket list that I wanted to go on a meditation retreat for a long time. But I found that sitting in my apartment with Lego strewn all over the floors was just as purposeful, if not more so, than being in a pristine Buddhist meditation hall somewhere. So that's where I really started thinking, I want to know more about this. And I went on to become trained by 2 Zen monks in how to be with the dying. And I was assigned as a hospice volunteer at Bellevue Hospital in New York, which is our largest public hospital, where I encountered hundreds and hundreds of people at the end of their lives from many, many diverse traditions, coming up with different ways of thinking about the end of their lives.
Yeah. What did you, I mean, in all of your, you worked as a hospice worker for how long?
For 2 years before I had to take a break because my own parents were dying.
Okay. So you've had quite a bit of experience with death, as most of us have, but what was the most, like, I don't know, compelling or powerful thing you experienced in hospice work? I've worked in some end of life care myself, and had some very powerful experiences, in the hospital with folks who are really at the end. And is there anything that stands out for you about people who are, I don't want to say handling it well, but, honoring it, respecting it?
Yes. I think when people have had an opportunity to think about death, and to also think about their lives in the context of something larger, they seem to do better with the end. Just as an example, we had a young woman from New Zealand who was Maori, which is the indigenous tradition of New Zealand. And she had come to the United States as a visiting student and quickly found out that she had a terminal illness that was going so quickly. And she didn't have family members around her. So I spent a lot of time with her. And she said to me at one point, you know, I'm not alone here. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, in our tradition, all of my ancestors are coming around the bedside to, like, take my hand and walk me over this threshold. And I thought that was extraordinarily beautiful, this sort of sense of continuity, truly like Heartwood, where those who had gone before her for generations were there to support her. I also one day walked into the room of a Hindu woman who had a red pen in her hand and a notebook, and she was writing what her husband told me was Ram, 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 which means God, God, God. And to her, it was a way of intensely focusing her mind and spirit around what was coming for her. But it doesn't have to be a religious tradition. And some people derive so much strength from, for example, I found a lot of people who had done the 12-step program who were really moved by the serenity prayer. You know, grant right. me the courage to accept the things that I cannot change, and courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I think when we've spent some time actually thinking about death, we have a chance of doing a little better when it comes to the end of our lives.
Okay, I have an email here that I want to read. It's an interesting question. It says, interesting topic, thank you. I am 74 years of age, but still think of myself as in my 30s. Is this dysfunctional? I am reminded of the tale of the grasshopper and the ants. Am I being short-sighted grasshopper or simply enjoying life to the fullest? My girlfriend keeps telling me to plan for inevitable reality, so I wonder about balancing the joy of living in the moment with being a responsible human, considerate of my eventual survivors.
That's a fantastic question. You know, I think there are many things that we can do to help the people who will come after us. It certainly makes sense to have a medical proxy who knows your wishes around your death and dying so that it's not prolonged if you don't want it to be, or you're fighting till the end if that's what you prefer it to be.
Right.
It's good to have your documents and your will in place. But I would say that it really, like, I sense a bit of joy in this mm-hmm. person and their question, and that they really do seem to be living fully in this moment. I would say that it doesn't have to be hard, and we don't have to think of endings as death and pain. We can actually practice in the small goodbyes of everyday life. You know, I think about this a lot when my kids head off to school or my husband goes off to work. I work at home, so I'm the one who usually is the anchor in the house. And I like to think of those as moments where I can stop whatever it is that I'm doing and to say goodbye. It's small goodbye, and hopefully they will be back at the end of the day. You never know, but it is a way that sort of eases me into these thinking about, you know, the existential questions of life and death.
Yeah, I remember that part in the book, and it is very powerful to think about taking those moments. And I think that's a great, it's a great illustration of something we do as a throwaway. All right, bye, see you later. Just sort of a, you toss it out there, as opposed to really stopping and being present and looking at someone and giving a hug or saying, you know, I hope you have a wonderful day. I'll see you tonight. Hopefully, you know, God willing, and the river don't rise. So that was really powerful for me to think about how our everyday interactions can have more depth. And I think that's sort of the, maybe the hope that you, that is, I found in this book is like finding those moments to really hold on to the things that matter instead of just letting them sort of flow by without noticing.
Yes. I think a lot about what happened to all of us during COVID. I mean, there were so many losses in our faith, and they weren't always the physical death of the body. Many people were forced to relocate, so they lost the home that they had lived in, or they might have had a shift or a loss of job. And I think that even some people who retired during that time, well, that might seem like a happy occasion. There's a loss around a sense of work community and the stability of doing the same thing day after day, which so many of us didn't have during COVID when we were sort of forced back into our homes. So there are so many ways that we lose things. And one of the things that has been wonderful for me is that a lot of people who have read the book have said, this is really helping me deal with something else, the loss of a relationship like a divorce or, you know, the loss of, somebody said, a piece of jewelry that had meant something so much to them. But really, these are the smaller things that are stand-ins for the bigger losses of our lives. And how are we saying goodbye to all of that?
Right. Okay, if you're just tuning in today, interfaith chaplain and author Barbara Becker is joining us to discuss her new book, Heartwood, which chronicles her journey to answer one question: can we live our lives more fully knowing someday we will die? If you have a question for my guests or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in three ways. In Anchorage, our phone number is 907-550-8433. We can be reached toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get your questions on the air is to email them to us at line1@alaskapublic.org. After a short break, we will continue our conversation with Barbara Becker. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us today, interfaith chaplain and author Barbara Becker is joining us to discuss her new book, Heartwood, which chronicles her journey to answer the question, can we live our lives more fully knowing someday we will die? If you have a question or a comment about today's topic, you want to share an experience you've had around the death of a loved one, greeting or facing your own death, please feel free to call us or email us. Our Anchorage number is 907-550-8433. Toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. alaskapublicmedia.org. Please don't wait till the end of the show. We get a lot of calls at the end of the show, and then I can't get them on. So call in early, and we will get you on the air. Okay, Barbara, I always remember there's an experience I had at the hospital. I was working as a medical social worker, and I think it was my second day on the job, and I was, you know, in my 20s, and I didn't know a whole lot. And I was asked to go talk to this lady who had terminal brain cancer, and there was nothing they could do, and they wanted me to go check on her, and I was terrified of knowing that she's dying. I mean, what do you say? How you doing? How's your day going? And so I was terrified as this young social worker, and I walked into her office and or into her room, and she just lit up, and she said that I asked her how she was doing. She said, "I'm doing wonderful. I have family coming in that I haven't seen in years. I have these, I'm going to be surrounded by all the people that I love most." And she talked to me for an hour about how grateful she was in her life. And I left there fundamentally, like, I think different in some way, having witnessed and shared her story and her gratitude and her appreciation. And that I think of as doing death well, or the coming of it. And I'm sure you've had lots of those experiences. Barbara may not be with us. Okay, well, I will continue. We will call Barbara back. It's interesting because I've been thinking about doing a show like this, and one of the conversations I had before I got this email out of the blue, talking about death and dying and finding connection and meaning, is I was talking to my parents, who have been on the show a couple of times, and they're both psychologists, and they write a lot these days about their life, and you know, they're in their 80s now. I guess my mom will be 80 on the 20th, so my dad is 84, and I was talking to my parents about coming on the radio show and doing, I don't know, I called it facing death, where you're coming to the end of your life, and you know that, I remember my mom saying, my dad used to say, "Someday we'll get a boat and we'll travel around," and my mom said, "Bruce, someday is now. We are getting older." So, Barbara, you back with us?
I am back with you, and I really appreciate what you're talking about. There are so many moments when I go into the room of somebody who's nearing the end of their life, feeling like I'm the one who's getting the gift out of this.
Yeah.
It truly sometimes feels like a sacred moment to be in that place of something that our society causes us to be so fearful of. And I question that sometimes. I mean, we have this idea that death has a dark cape and a hood and a scythe and is like going to tap his bony finger on our shoulder. But where did we come up with that? Like, can we instead perhaps think of death as a friend, or sometimes I think of death as like a mother figure who wants to embrace me into the next phase rather than terrify me.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I mean, I haven't studied death in a lot of other cultures, but what is it about Western culture that sort of has felt this need? I remember sitting like this huge discussion about whether my oldest daughter should see my grandmother with an open casket, and when she was like 4 or 5 years old, and there was some disagreement in the family about whether that was appropriate or not, and whether she should be see granny in that way, right? And I wonder, how did we get so far away from the washing of the body and the you know, the parade and the celebration of that life? How did we get to this place of fear?
It's such a good question. I feel fortunate personally to have grown up in a home where my parents cared for my two elderly grandmothers after my grandfathers had died. So I saw the lead up to death, you know, the diagnosis of the illnesses that eventually got them as it progressed and things got harder, right up until the moment of both of their deaths. And it wasn't until I was a little bit older that I realized this was an unusual experience for so many of my friends. What's happening now, though, is that I think there's beginning to be a bit of a shift. We have something called the death acceptance movement, and we have, for instance, green funeral directors who are helping families wash the body after their loved one passes away, you know, put on some fresh clothing and perhaps adorn their bodies with flowers. They're doing green burials, natural burials, rather than embalming, which came about during the Civil War, talking about how terrifying death has been in our culture for so long. And I think it's really getting back to a tradition. You mentioned that I'm an ordained interfaith minister, and I was thinking about the women who went to Jesus's grave ready to embalm him, and on Easter found the rock rolled away. So it's a story from one tradition in this culture that is so interesting to me and instructive about how this used to be different, and that there was a beauty and a purpose to being present with death.
Yeah, it's that was an interesting part of the book. You decided to you came home and told your husband you were just going to become a interfaith minister. You had always been sort of curious about religions and other cultures and their stories, but why did you need to? You didn't want a congregation. You said you didn't want to be a pastor. What sort of motivated that movement for you, or that shift into like really exploring that piece of it?
The key to that is that I became an interfaith minister, which means that I studied all of the world's major religious traditions, as well as some indigenous beliefs too, because I wanted to be able to work with people regardless of what they believed and where they were from. And I wanted also to be able to have language to speak with the rising spiritual but not religious segment of our population. I mean, right now, upwards of a third of the U.S. population considers themselves spiritual but not necessarily religious.
Yeah, that is an interesting shift, and I think we've lost some of a sense of community around that and traditions and rituals, because I think that's such an important part of religion. And it seems like it was a lot of that is made to explain or to make us feel more comfort around death. Like, why do we protect our children from death when every single one of us, ain't none of this old guy used to say, ain't none of us getting out of here alive. And it seems like such a critical piece to, is just another phase of our evolution, right? And so how did we get so much fear around it?
Yeah, I think in addition to not being near people as they were dying, we also got away from our farms and our land. Now, I think about my brother's children who are growing up next to a sheep farm in New Jersey, and they have birthed sheep, but they've also been present right at the moment that they die, and the other animals on the farm as well. I mean, we don't have that often when we live in a city. You know, sometimes we might take our animal to be put down at a vet, and we might not have that chance to be present when they draw their last breath. So the farther and farther we got from this active participation in the end of life, of all kinds. I think we bred fear into our population.
Yeah, and I work with a lot of people that in my practice who are just absolutely terrified of death, to a point of fixating on it beyond, you know, what would be considered a normal thinking about death. just terrified of the whole idea of it so much that they can't even like get through a day without wondering, you know, how they're going to die, when they're going to die, what comes after after death. I mean, it just seems there is such a, and I don't know how I'm going to approach it. As I get older, 56 now, I'm starting to really think about, you know, I'm not that far from my parents' age. And I mean, what is your experience? You've had some brushes in your own health stuff. How have you sort of like, you wrote a book about handling death well. So that's a lot of pressure, right? You gotta step up and handle yours well.
Oh my goodness. And the irony of ironies is that on the day that Heartwood was released into the world, I myself was having surgery for a new diagnosis of breast cancer. Mm. And I am so lucky that it was caught early and that my prognosis is good, but in the early days, you don't know that. You're waiting for the pathology reports to come back.
Yeah.
And I picked up my own book to really look for comfort in its pages. And I was really glad that I had done all of this work thinking about death, because it was sort of an experience of like being told by the doctor, you know, you have cancer, and most people's reaction is, why me? But mine was really, why not me? I mean, it will be everybody at some point. Something's going to get you, as my grandmother used to say. And I also found that when we don't push away illness, and we really kind of take it in and use it as something to explore, we learn a lot. One of my dear friends has multiple sclerosis, and I at some point was projecting of the horrors of my future life, and was I going to make it till my kids graduated and got married, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, you know, Barbara, it sure sounds like you're writing chapter 24 of your life when you're only on chapter 4. And talk about being thrown right back into the present moment, because that's really what this is. We can plan, and planning is good, but really it comes back to this moment.
Right. I think it makes me think of, I think it was Mark Twain, who said, I've had many troubles in my life, most of which never happened. you know, the anticipation of suffering, I think is where anxiety and fear lives. But I mean, what was your experience? I mean, does it eliminate fear of death to have all this knowledge and all this experience and to read and to work with people? Does it put you at ease with it in your own life, or how is that addressed? How has all this research like influenced your state of mind around death?
What really puts me at ease is a sense of realism, I would say. You know, one of the things we do in our world is we always look for the silver linings. You know, we're always taught that when hardship comes, like what could be the gift in this? But what really looking at death and the illness that I have been through, has caused me to do is to realize, like the Taoists say, that this is a world of 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. It's both. It's sort of that yin and yang of existence. And we have to learn how to dance with it, to be present to all of it. You know, life as it is, not just as we would like it to be.
Yeah, that sort of that radical, that idea of radical acceptance. And I think that goes back to your serenity prayer reference, where the real important piece of the serenity prayer is the wisdom to know the difference of what you can control and what you cannot control. I think that's where a lot of people get hung up in trying to control things that are outside of their area. All right, we are at the 40-minute break. I have an email I want to ask Barbara about when we come back, but we'll go ahead and take this break right now. For those of you who might be tuning in late, Interfaith Chaplain and author Barbara Becker is joining us to discuss her new book, Heartwood, which chronicles her journey to answer one question: can we live our lives more fully knowing someday we will die? If you have a question for my guest or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in three ways. Our Anchorage number is 907-550-8433. Toll free, we can be reached at 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we will continue our conversation with Barbara Becker. I'm Prentice Pemberton. This is Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Barbara Becker. We are talking about her new book, Heartwood, which chronicles her journey to answer the question, can we live our lives more fully knowing someday we will die? If you have a question for Barbara, a comment, or an experience you'd like to share, you can give us a call. In Anchorage, it's 907-550-8433. Toll free, 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. Please give us a call in the next few minutes if you have a question, and we will get you on the air with Barbara. Okay, I can't answer this question because I don't know who these people are, but one of our listeners writes in and asks, what, Barbara, is your opinion of Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens et al.?
So I don't have a great answer for that. I'm not that familiar with their work, although I have read, I think it's called Death by Christopher Hitchens.
Okay.
You know, I think that our systems of belief don't necessarily have to come from religion. No, I am absolutely not a proselytizer about any particular religious tradition. And I think there's a lot of beauty to be found in the independent thinking of the spiritual but not religious. My own father was someone who went to church if he had to, but he was most comfortable sitting around reading Henry David Thoreau's Walden.
Right.
And what I really loved about that was that our buddy there, Thoreau, who spent 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days out in the woods, really did his quest as a journey to come to terms with his brother's death.
Hmm.
And his young brother who had died in his arms. And he actually said, you know, I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately. And he wanted to find out that he learned what life had to teach and not when I come to die discover.
All right. Looks like we are having some a quickly remedied problem. We'll just get Barbara right back on the phone. Maybe she can hear me. I do have an email here. We should be able to get back to Barbara here pretty quickly. But I'll go ahead and read this email in the meantime, and then we have a phone call that we'll get to once we get Barbara back on the line. Looks like something's happening. Is Barbara with us? Hello, Barbara.
Hello. And isn't that just an example of a little ending of life? You know, like, can we take it as these things happen and kind of flow and figure out how to move through it?
Yeah, just keep talking, right? So before I lost you, do you remember what you were saying?
I was talking about Thoreau and the places where we find sustenance in whatever it is we believe, whether that is a religious tradition or really whether we're atheists or we don't have a tradition that gives us comfort in that way, but we might find it in, you know, the ebb and flow of the tide or the change of the seasons or the waxing and waning of the moon.
Yeah, there's so many great examples in life and in nature of death and endings and new beginnings and rebirth, all of those concepts. And I really liked your referencing back to, life on the farm where you see foals. And I grew up, you know, my grandfather was a farmer and we would see the calves that would be stillborn. And there was lots of death on a farm. And it was kind of normalized. And some of my most powerful experiences are being a little kid around some of my relatives' deaths and being able to participate in that as in a meaningful way and celebrate their life and show up. So we're going to go ahead and Bill's been holding on. He's been on hold for 5 minutes, so... Bill in Anchorage, you have a question or a comment for Barbara? Go ahead.
Because it happened before. Anyway, a great show. A friend of mine got on an airplane, went down and visited her grandmother, and they ended up talking about her having lunch and, you know, why don't you get me some tapioca pudding? And when she came back, her grandmother had left. Okay, so that was like, how did you know to go there then? You know, last conversation I had with my mom, she says, when are you going to come see me? I said, Mom, I can't pick the weekend. She says, what do you mean? How are we going to say goodbye to each other? So my friend basically talks to these mediums, and they talk to her, and they're remarkably accurate from what they're saying. I don't know what's going on with that. And I'll leave you with two thoughts. Arthur Conan Doyle and Houdini had an argument about whether this was an accurate way to, you know, to either communicate or study what's, you know, I called them the beyonders. And when I got diagnosed with cancer, I kind of realized that every day is a gift, just like this show. So I'm going to hang up and listen to the answer, and I really appreciate you getting here into your apprentice this morning with all that snow out there. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the call and the comment. You have any thoughts on that, Barbara?
Yeah, I mean, first, I just want to wish Bill well, and I applaud him for noticing the gift in the everyday. And, you know, all kinds of mysterious things happen at the end of life. I can't explain some of the things that I have seen when I'm with people at the very end. I was in a hospice room one day, and I didn't notice right away that the person in the bed was a relative of my husband, who I didn't even know was on hospice.
Hmm.
You know, so I was drawn right to that room, and she was talking to people all around the bedside as if they were there. I mean, she could see them. She was gesturing to them, but I couldn't see them at all. You know, and I have learned to suspend any sense of disbelief I have and sort of to enter into the experience of the person who is dying. It's the only way I know how to do it. And I can't say I have any great answers, but what I do believe in is sort of the comfort now to me of mystery. It's okay that I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I like that. There's so much in your book about just being okay with being and with being uncomfortable and of joining people where they are. We think we have to have these amazing things to say when someone's dying, when really, you know, as it's pointed out in your book, all they might want to do is lay in bed and watch Jeopardy. And joining somebody where they are. I mean, we as people often recoil away from our friends who are dying or close members because we don't want to deal with our own discomfort. It's not really about theirs as much as it is ours. Would you like agree with that?
Oh my goodness, I would absolutely agree with that. And I, even in my own diagnosis of breast cancer, I had people say to me things like, well, did you ever smoke? No. you know, does this run in your family? Like a lot of questions that I recognized as wanting to calm their own fears about developing this themselves. It's really hard to be present for the idea of death if we're so afraid of illness, or we're pushing it away thinking that we can do so many hours of yoga and drink so many, you know, health shakes and we're going to avoid it, because the fact is we're not.
Yeah, I love that, because so often like people are looking for an answer like, oh, why'd this happen to you? Because I want to be sure not to do that thing.
Yes.
when really it's luck and timing, and there's so many factors that go into it. All we can do is do our best in the moment. And I think that's, and to, you know, hopefully maximize our life. But I want to read an email that somebody sent about stories and folklore. It says, do we greet death with resistance, Dylan Thomas, rail, rail against the dying of the light, or as a new friend, companion in the next phase of our soul's journey? And Larry says, I am reminded of an old Twilight Zone episode with Robert Redford and I think Agnes Moorehead. She feared death, and the dying young police officer on her doorstep convinced her to allow him in. She came to realize that Redford's character was not to be feared, but welcomed. A lot of life lessons come from stories. I'm sure you've run into a lot of stories and folklore and things relating to death, which are really powerful.
I have. You know, one of the great joys of my professional career was working with Gloria Steinem, and she said it so beautifully. I mean, she said that telling our stories is both the hardest thing and the most important thing we have to contribute. So when I talk to people about death, I often say, do not do this alone. Like, use this time. Around the world right now, there's something called the Death Cafe movement, where people in over 80 countries gather to have tea and cake, and it came from England, and to talk about death and any questions they might have or any fears they might have. So you have complete strangers gathering to talk about a topic that's normally taboo. Mm-hmm. It turns out we're absolutely hungry to talk about this. We thirst so much for that connection that comes from allowing death in.
Yeah, I think that's the fear piece. And I have an email here. It said, it says, I think you need to give religion itself some credit for people fearing dying. I believe the fire and brimstone style of preaching set a standard for such a thing. Do some religions promote fearing death and others celebrate it, or have you noticed a difference?
Yeah, and that absolutely can happen. I mean, creating a fear was a way of kind of controlling people.
Right.
And that's the part of religion that I don't love so much myself. I'm drawn more to the mystical traditions that point to our interconnection with each other, and also our, like, joining one another in a more cosmic kind of way.
Yeah, I want to get to one topic, and we're, of course, just about out of time. But I do want to ask you one question that is critical and sort of in my work, and that's with people who get stuck. Some people go through the loss of a loved one, and they feel they grieve, they're sad, they're angry. They go through the cycles, the grief process, and other people seem to get stuck in a loop where their life sort of freezes up and seizes in the moment where they lose a son or a parent or a brother. Do you have a theory or knowledge on why some people are more resilient and why some people get stuck?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. You know, there is no timetable or specific way of doing grief. And people can have debilitating sorrow and numbness or like even guilt and anger. But if these feelings go on for longer than a year, where you really can't move forward with life and you kind of find yourself having major disruption of sleep or perhaps turning to alcohol or other substances or having suicidal thoughts, then this might be complicated grief, which is sometimes called persistent complex bereavement disorder. And that's when it's really time to get help. There's no clear answer. It's been studied as to why this happens. Researchers can sometimes point to sudden or violent death, or like the death of a child, or the grievers, you know, previous history with depression or PTSD. But the good news here is that there are ways to cope, and getting help, getting counseling, cognitive behavioral therapy works really well for this. And sometimes the help of antidepressants to help ease this so that we can move on and get on with our lives and be those growth rings around the heartwood.
Yeah, that's such an important message because, and I do think it seems to be those times when a young person dies suddenly or in a violent way, we seem to do better with the normal, like grandma, grandpa passing on in their 80s. It's sad, but it's pretty normalized. It's what's expected. It's the unexpected ones that seem to leave the biggest mark.
Yes, that is very frequently the case. I do write some of those stories in Heartwood of sudden loss. I think they're important to pay attention to.
Yep, well, we are at the end of our hour. And Barbara, I want to thank you for sharing your story and your journey with us and letting us be witness to it. I appreciate your time.
It has been such an honor to be with you. Happy holidays.
Yes, and you as well. I really appreciate Barbara taking the time to join us today. That was a wonderful conversation. My thanks to our producer, Madeline Rose, who is stuck somewhere, and to audio engineer Tobin Shelby. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to tune in today. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.